Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Challenge Final Reckoning Wrap-Up Podcast for Episode 2. I am Brian Cohn. Here, as always, is my co-host, Allie Lesher. Allie, how are you?
I'm doing well, Brian. Excited to continue to be talking about the challenge.
Sounds positively joyous.
I'm feeling a little under the weather. I actually got sick while doing a live podcast with Rob about Big Brother.
Oh, no.
So it was a steady decline. I'm on the rise now, but it's been a real bookend of podcasts and my sickness.
Well, if there's one to be like under the weather for, it's definitely the drunk aunt of the podcast. Rather you be 100% for that one, so that's good.
Yeah, no, definitely. You can see me starting to like break out into a feverish sweat probably halfway through the video podcast if anyone wants to check that out.
We'll have to timestamp that. We'll go back and look for that one.
Sad news to report. I don't think anybody volunteered to be our chief party officer. That didn't. You think you get too cocky with what you can ask on the internet.
Well, actually, you know who actually did volunteer, but is definitely not going to follow through, and it was just like a half-hearted
Plain
offer.
Plainview
too. That would be incredible. But Dane offered.
Wow. That is amazing. He should do it. Somebody actually did tweet us. I will give credit to Kyle Picard, who did tweet us a count that there were hashtag no drinks last night on the episode.
There you go. We picked back then.
Do you have something to add to the party game for Kyle, Dane, or more realistically, myself to keep track of?
Well, I think one that sparked a lot of people's interest was the discoloration of wine. So maybe we do any weird colored alcohol.
Now, I like that. Does that count when the alcohol is just a weird color, like blue Curacao, for example? We counting that?
I think when it's noticeably different than what it should be, hence the green white wine that Jemmy was drinking, that would be a drink.
I think that's a fantastic addition. I've made note of it.
There we go.
My addition this week is anytime someone makes too big of a deal of a dream. I feel like that also goes with Jemmy, but this time it was Veronica.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That did happen last year. When was that last year or 2 seasons ago when the drunk they came back from like Redemption House or something like that? I remember that now.
Jemmy just like continuously dreamt about Anissa every time took a step, basically. Yeah. But yes.
All right. So we got dreams and we got discolored alcohol.
Yeah, so for anyone keeping track unofficially who just doesn't want to come forward, we have anytime they flash back to the same episode, plastic surgery as an insult. Now, there is some discrepancy at whether or not Shane's comments about Kyle's hair transplants would count. I always say err on the side of drinking.
Yes.
If you're of age.
When in doubt, drink. That's a good motto.
I think this is a pretty strong. It definitely goes season to season. I like that. It definitely is not just for this season.
This is going to become like one of those camp games where like one person says something and the next person has to repeat that and say a new thing. And then the third person has to repeat the two things and add a new thing. We're going to be trying to remember like 12 different things by like mid-season. And it's going to be fun.
I like the idea that you think I just remembered these. I had it written down.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to try to remember that. That's going to be my task.
Okay, next time I'll quiz you.
Yeah, perfect.
What do you think of the Spy Shack as an addition to the Redemption House?
It's a weird. I would say it's good, except for the fact that now we're going to spend even more time at the Redemption House, which I don't want. But I do like that it's giving them something else to do, which is good. So it's a kind of a double-edged sword.
So why do you say you don't want them spending time at the Redemption House?
Because if only like two people, let's say one team comes back, like I don't need to be spending time with all these other teams that are just going home. And any of the relationships they're making there are moot because they're all just have to make new relationships with the people actually in the game.
So I would normally agree with you, except that the most interesting thing that happened this episode, in my opinion, had to be Chuck and Brittany.
Yes, I knew you'd be all over that one. The second we got like the second we got like a Britney confessional and we're starting to get the flashbacks to her season. I'm like, all right, Allie's perked up on her seat. She's ready to go. She's getting her answers.
I mean, was there something more interesting in the episode than that?
Probably not. It was very interesting. backstory of what we still don't really know. They're still like a little vague with what happened. It just seemed like Chuck like ghosted her basically, but I think he has like a different way to spin it. But that's kind of the way it went down, it seems.
What I loved about this conversation is that, first of all, Chuck's in business casual. Like, he dressed for this meeting. He dressed for success here. And Brittany is wearing a crazy person mask. Like, that's not her face. Like, no. I don't know how she contorted her face to look so terrifying. Maybe she is a witch. Like, this really had me spooked.
Yeah, the facial expressions were off the charts from Brittany. And Davon said it best, where she, like, said she's going for a Meryl Streep moment, because it was over the top.
If Chuck doesn't survive, Brittany better be your first stop.
Yes.
Like, check with Brittany.
Check her freezer.
So the way I saw this is, first of all, Chuck says he only has two options. Like, he either stay in this horrible, toxic relationship, which I don't doubt that it wasn't a good relation. Like, I'm not saying, like, it was paradise and he walked out on her. Like, that's fine. I'm sure it wasn't great. Stay in a toxic relationship or abscond. Like, those are not your only two choices, bro. You can leave and, like, not be the worst person in the world. My impression from, like, you know, there's two sides of every story and then there's the truth, I don't know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of them are telling the complete story, but it seems like the relationship was bad and Chuck ghosted.
Yes, that seems to be, like, what each side is saying, and then, like, the reason why it was bad. I feel like each side has their spin on it, but yeah, I mean, people like break up, like that just happens. Like, and people have conversations. They don't always just like poof and disappear. So that was weird rationale by Chuck saying this is like his only option. Otherwise, he's going to live a life of misery.
And in a fun, unexpected twist, Brittany cites Chuck. So for anyone who doesn't watch Are You the One, they always have these like problem areas. So like maybe Chuck's was like, I'm a cheater or whatever. Like, Brittany cites something that Chuck said on their season of Are You the One before they got together, that he like always cheats, as evidence that he cheated on her. Weird, weird piece of evidence to pull as like something you knew before you started dating, that something now you're mad about.
Yeah, I mean, she saw the red flags and still dove in, because she's, as she said, still very attracted to him.
I mean, we watched that season. There were red flags all around.
Oh, I mean, to be very fair, there's red flags on both ends. But
yeah, yeah.
Chuck's is very very apparent.
It's a Ferris wheel of red flags just all yes. around.
I love the aftermath of the progress report that was doled out by Jenna and Jimmy to Brittany.
Oh, the Redemption House is where Jemmy needs to live. Like, the way she said, like, this game is working for me. I can watch The Real House but not have to be with any of those people. Like, Jemmy is best suited for the Redemption House.
So how often do you think they're going to be able to see things that happen? Like, they're probably never going to be able to see it live. So it's always going to be like, this is, like, what happened last night, or this is what happened with, like, a voting. Like, how much do you think they're actually going to be able to see?
Yeah, that's a good question. Edward Morris proposed that the Redemption House should just be like us seeing the previously on. Like, they should be right. like showing the Redemption House a clip, and that's just our previously on. I feel like they're only going to see, it's going to be sort of like, you didn't watch X on the Beach, but it seems to be like the Shack of Secrets, which was anytime anything that would blow up somebody's life or relationship happened, they went down to the Shack of the Secrets and rolled a clip. So I feel like when something is important and needs to happen, like, they need to know, like, two people got eliminated, they'll show it. I'm going to invite you to put on your tinfoil hat, Brian, if you could find it, if it's in reach.
I opened the drawer, I found it, digging it out. There's a little dust on it, but it's ready to go.
All right, great. So people were saying on Twitter last week that, and people on the challenge were saying this, that Jenna and Jemmy's coffin was buried noticeably deeper than everybody else's, and that they were like at a disadvantage in that challenge. Now that I see the spy shack, it seems clearly designed for people in a relationship to watch their significant other cheat on them unbeknownst to the cheater. Is it possible that Jenna and Jemmy were sabotaged so that Jenna could watch Zach be skeezy?
That is like a deep, deep, like deep theory.
Deep as her coffin.
Yes. I can't imagine. I mean, I'm gonna veto it, but I love the thought. I just think it's like too diabolical that they would go down that road.
Oh, I agree. It's completely implausible and ridiculous. I do think that this shack is completely, this spy area is completely designed for people in relationships to watch difficult scenes of whoever their significant other is.
See, the thing that I was hoping for, which based off the limited explanation of the rules, I don't think we're going to get, but this is like perfectly set up for if they went back to, which I don't think they have done in like years, is like blind voting, where like if you basically like if they voted like Survivor and like the people in the reception house could just see all the votes, and that way people can, they would have that information when they go back in the house. But that doesn't seem like what they're doing based off some of the previews for how the voting goes down. But that's what, that seems to be the best way to use this surveillance room.
Yeah, otherwise, there's absolutely no purpose to it.
Right.
Like, I mean, you're just watching people hang out. Like, unless it's cheating or, like, unless somebody, like, you thought, even without voting, like, if somebody was just two-timing you strategically, I feel like that doesn't really tend to happen. People usually know where they stand for the most part.
Yeah, even when there's blindsides, it's still, like, you could see it coming blindsides. Very few times are people way in the dark on a vote. Even, like, last season when Bananas was blindsided by Tony, like, he definitely knew what was happening at that moment. So it was, like, it's not as vital. And what did they gain from this information? They saw the fight. Like, they would have walked back and Kayla and Melissa would have been gone anyway, so what's the difference?
It also killed me that Brittany walks into that room and is like, this room is dope. Like, this room has a single bench in it. Nothing about that room was, quote, dope.
You know, it was dope, the fact that there was, like, a TV and it was entertainment and it was not just talking to people and that you hate or want to get...
Great point, actually. Yeah,
that was dope.
Aside from being, and we get another clip later where they're in the Redemption House, like, waking up, like, Jenna's like, I gotta keep my head in the game. The second you get your head out of the game, it's over. I'm just thinking to myself, like, probably more in Jenny's camp, like, waking up in this Redemption House has to be the best option. You're still getting airtime. You're not having to compete every day. You're still getting whatever your stipend is. And you're just on a free vacation. Like, all the Redemption House people are posting group photos. They're hanging out. They're drinking green wine. It's paradise.
Yeah, it seems like a very relaxed atmosphere for people. Just like, I mean, the downside is you are not really in the game, so you can be eliminated really at any moment and really be eliminated. But it's not like the worst thing. It's not like you're like living on like a abandoned like island or something like that. So
if you have to go out, it's a nice hallway towards the exit. Yep. It's a nice extension before you have to leave.
It's not a bad middle ground.
So the biggest cliffhanger from last week was what was going to happen to the abandoned duo of the boxers, Mel and Kayla, who got sent home.
Yes, and I think as we suspected, Cam and Kaylee were put together to form a new team, which really made the most sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Do you feel like it's fair? And I know that fair is a loaded word on MTV.
I mean, the fact that... Life. Yeah, I mean, I think of all, like... This is, like, one of the more fair things because Cam and Kaylee already have, like, a treacherous past. So, I mean, like, in, like, the previous iteration of Vendettas, which was called Rivals, which is the same thing, when someone was sent home, they literally brought back Leroy's best friend. So, like, the fact that they're just pairing two other people that don't get along is pretty fair.
Yeah, I agree. This was definitely the way to handle it. What I didn't think was fair is Cam's assessment of Kaylee being like, well, we already know Kaylee cracks under the pressure. I'm like, she quit because she was like severely like emotionally beaten down. Like, I'm not saying it was the right move to quit, but like to say that she cracks under pressure, that was not normal in-game pressure.
No, definitely. And definitely a lot more further than getting pillows thrown at you, which some other people can't handle.
I mean, did I tell you Angela's going to be good TV? Or did I tell you Angela's going to be good TV?
She's the best. I'm all in on the Angela train.
And the fact that there's going to be a flirtationship at minimum between Bananas and Angela, I cannot wait. I will wear a Banangela shirt. If there is Banangela merch, I will purchase it.
And I could see this going down, like, we're in another season or two where we're getting another, like, Camilla-like rampage from Angela. Because she has that, like, inner demon in her, it seems like. So that could, like, unleash on Bananas again.
And what I like about Angela, I feel like no chance of racism.
Yes.
Which is definitely Camilla Plus.
So the fun rampage. The I'm going to murder you and bury you in the backyard rampage. Not the, you know, the other stuff.
So that's fun. What's not fun is Polly and Kara. Like, I actually, this is episode 2. I can't do much more of them.
Yeah. You know, you don't like their discussion over who's Batman, who's Wonder Woman, who's Superman. That wasn't doing it for you?
Kara knows I'm in a committed relationship and nothing can happen. But that doesn't mean we can't be close friends. Like, I don't know the quote, but he talks like the phone on Dream Phone. I don't know if you're ever forced to play Dream Phone. It's actually Muzzy and the voice from Dream Phone are my best impressions.
It's fantastic. I never thought we'd be getting down this road, but this is great.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Dream Phone is the game with the big pink phone.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's spot on.
He looks cool in whatever he wears. Like, that's Polly talking. Like, I can't take it. Anyway, someone will know. Maybe one person will know this. Everybody else will turn off the podcast.
He also uses the phrase that I never see used in, like, real life, but I see used on, like, reality shows everywhere, where he said something like, I appreciate her as, like, a human, which is, like, people say stuff like that on reality shows all the time, but I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, like, I appreciate you as a person, or I respect you and appreciate, like, no one talks like that in real life, unless you're on, like, an MTV show.
You're hanging out with the wrong crowd.
I guess so.
Dane never tells you he appreciates you as a person.
I never.
No, that's right. I mean, but Polly's not living in this world.
No.
Polly's an alien.
Ugh. What about Kara? What about with the dynamic now with Kyle also, and Brad being nervous that Kyle's dynamic's going to take him down as his partner?
Besides from Kara having won the first solo win of the challenge ever, can you explain to me why her ego is so big? Because, like, this is now the second episode where she's basically acting like, you know, to quote King Curtis from Wife Swap, she's the queen and we're the sorry people. Like, I don't understand why this week she's telling Brad, yeah, like, it would be great for me to see Kyle go, which means Brad go. Like, since when do you have all the power? Your teammate is Marie. Like, last week you told Polly to sleep with you to the end. Your teammate is Marie. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand why she thinks she has all this power in the game and she could be so cocky to say to Brad, I want to eliminate your team.
She has, like, this spoiled brat persona that is, it's like growing. Like, she's gone through, like, quite the transformation, where first she was like the underdog where you want to root for them, and then they started getting a little better, and they're like, oh, look at Kara, she's doing great, and then she reached, like, a peak where she's like, oh, now she's, like, being annoying, and then she kind of got back down again where she seemed to be coming back around to Earth where you can, like, root for her, and then she's swinging right back up again where you, like, want to punch her in the face.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to punch her in the face, but, like, I just don't understand the ego on this. Like, and that's happening with everyone, right? Like, Natalie's having these conversations about bananas. Like, you can't tell someone's teammate you want their teammate out of the game. Like, you have to play nice, or it's like Cam and Natalie and Kaylee. Like, everyone's got to play nice with their vendetta at least to a certain point.
And it's a weird thing, because I feel like I think it'll be easier to form, like, to bond over, like, if you're close with one half of a team, I feel like that's a good opportunity to then bond with the other person to kind of squash the vendetta, and rather than, like, adding another team that you might be targeted by or targeted to. So I don't understand why, like, Kaylee, like, they all want to target, like, the half that is against them. Why not bond them together? Like, it's a bizarre strategy to go down.
You know, I think we're actually the ones who have lost our minds because we're looking for, like, logic and reason in MTV strategy. Big things to talk about with Natalie. A lot came to light this episode that had been talked about last season, but we chose not to discuss it because it wasn't on Natalie's terms. Now Natalie has taken... made the decision to speak to America, use her platform, as she said on Twitter, to come out as pansexual and that she's in a relationship with a woman. And how does this play into the bananas, Natalie, Kaylee drama? I don't know, but I'm happy for Natalie to be able to sort of speak her truth in her own words this time.
Yeah, I mean, seems like a real, real, real shitty move by Kaylee. It'd be hard to defend it in any way. So, like, obviously, you had to take, like, Natalie's side about understanding why there'd be beef there, which is, I mean, it's kind of like not refreshing, but it's like when there's beef that is like understandable, it's nice to see, as opposed to like with the stupid beef. So like, you get why Natalie would be upset at Kaylee, but this is another instance of Kaylee and like Melissa, like they're the new big pot stars, because they get down and dirty with like anyone and everyone.
Yeah, Kaylee's a trash person. Like, I don't know why. Maybe because it wasn't on the show. Maybe because it's MTV and not CBS, right? But like, this is, I'm not the same, nothing is ever the same, but it's reminiscent of Varner outing Zeke, right, on Survivor, in the sense that Kaylee takes a story, I mean, it's a little different, but whatever, you know what I mean? Like, Kaylee takes a story that's not hers, uses it as an insult against her on social media, and Natalie had to then come out to her family in a way she didn't want to, and come out to America in a way she didn't want to, and Kaylee also like misidentified her sexuality on Instagram. So Kaylee sucks forever. I'm surprised we didn't get any clip from Kaylee on this. In a way, I'm happy that she didn't get to speak on this. On the other hand, I do think we will get her side, or at least an apology. Like, I feel like maybe Kaylee has realized that this was the wrong thing and they just wanted to like let Natalie hash it out first. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, this is like, maybe we get it when, if Natalie and Cam, like, come together and then this brings Kaylee. Like, maybe that's the instance of, like, building the bridge. I don't know. Do we know who Natalie is dating? Is it someone from, no, like, the TV world?
No, I looked too. She did, like, a couple interviews. I didn't see anything about it.
Got it. It's crazy. I have to say TV world and not just MTV, because who the hell knows with all the intermingling at this point?
As far as Natalie and Bananas goes, like, this was another conversation where Natalie just goes up to Bananas like, oh, are we going to fight the whole season? Like, kind of seems like she wants to reconcile in this conversation. And you just kind of see why Bananas is so good at what he does, because he's saying a lot of words and the tone of voice conveys that he has, like, actually something of substance to say. And he ends up making Natalie somehow look bad. Like, Paulie's like, yeah, she's the victim and starts drama. And Bananas is like, say whatever you want, Natalie, whatever. But, like, what was the underlying point he was making? Like, I didn't understand. He wasn't denying making out with her. He was just saying he didn't do it intentionally, or that Natalie should have confronted him first before unfollowing her. Like, I didn't really understand where he comes out in the right here.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the gift that he has. He says things so forcefully that you, like, believe him and take his side. And even if, like, when you're not even the one in the moment, where, like, even more so, like, that would work over you. So, yeah, I never fully got either side. Like, I don't know what, I mean, when, if he really did, like, make out with Kaylee, that was, like, right before or right as the season started. So nothing really was happening between him and Natalie at that point anyway. So, and then even beyond that, I don't really know, like, what happened between them off the show. That seems to be more of the issue. They said they had a big falling out right before the season. That wasn't really addressed, unless it was still going back to this Kaylee thing, which, like, I mean, if it was just like a makeout right before they started even, like, talking, like, I'm not even sure either side. Like, I'm very confused by both sides.
This has always felt like something concocted to make them more relevant, both of them. And even now, it still feels like that. Like, the fact, like, this argument in the bathroom, like, there really is no reason they should be fighting, unless it's like they were never really dating and then Natalie leaned into the skid of making Bananas look bad because he hooked up with Kaylee. Like, maybe that's the unspoken thing. Like, we weren't actually together and then you let everyone think I was a jerk. But just something doesn't feel like we have complete information here with this.
Yeah. Either there, or maybe, like you said, that means there's just no information to have, and the lack of information is the fact that there is no information.
Did you know this pillow thing was a thing?
I did not. I didn't want to say anything and come across as like a bad challenge fan, and like I never knew this was a thing.
I am the fan that I am, like Ron Swanson. I have the toes I have. I'll come off like whatever I am, whatever I come off as here. No, I mean, I think that's, they replayed a couple of seasons of the first person reading the clue getting pillows thrown at them. I think the only reason they haven't really shown it, if it does happen every season, is because nobody cares. It's like a fun little thing that happens, like a shit they should have shown clip.
Yeah. They only show it if it's worth showing. And I guess normally it's never worth showing, but we never had Angela before. So here we go.
I truly thought I was in the Twilight Zone, though, between Bananas and Natalie, and then Bananas going to do the right thing and apologize and explain it to Angela. I'm like, oh my God, like, where am I? Then he reveals his intentions were only because she's beautiful. And I was like, okay, like, we're in the same, like, it's the same Bananas.
We're in reality. But I mean, I think it was Kyle pointed out, like, I mean, he got everyone, not he didn't get everyone, but everyone else did, like, something, but led by him. But then he gets to butter up to her and get her on her, on his side. So at least he's got a little bit of an ally there.
And the best thing is when she pounced and stomps back up and reads the 5-word clue before walking right out. Like, the clue meant absolutely nothing. Didn't even tell you what time to be there. Like, no helpful information.
I couldn't believe someone didn't once again throw the pillow. Because that's like, you just, I mean, when someone's like that upset and then you get them to calm down, don't you just have to do it that one extra time to push them over the edge? Like, that's what I would have done.
Not Angela. You don't poke the bear.
I think
that's why they threw it at Faith after. Like, they just had to deflect.
Yeah, you know, I guess Faith is the cooler chick of the two.
All right, my watch says it's time to talk about the challenge.
We could. Yeah.
Do you have a watch? Do you have your watch?
I have like 4 different clocks staring at me in the face, so that, I'll go with that.
It's Tony time. That's him. Tony runs out and goes, you ever watch?
You know, Tony.
That was a big fail.
Yeah, I'm sorry. that didn't register on me. I'm sorry. That's on me. I'll take the blame.
Win some, lose some, you know.
Tony, you know, we talk about other people who like get like over, like, what's the too big for their bridges, where they like, or they come across like a much bigger ego than they should. For Tony, whose greatest accomplishment is losing a final, to come in with like the pounding of the ground like an earthquake is coming and people freaking out because he's here. I mean, the dude, I mean, I like Tony. He's, you know, he's a fun guy to have on the show. But let's like calm down a little bit that he's like this storied competitor who's going to just like he takes over the game.
Yeah, I did think it was a little exaggerated how all like the women were like, none of the men are clapping, and the men were like, uh-oh, that's a good team. It is a good team, especially compared to the field. Tony definitely did better last season, but let's see if that wasn't a fluke. You know, like, it's only been Tony time for like half a season. But also, I think they're more intimidated because Bananas and Tony are a great team together, and I know they have legitimate drama from last season, but there's no way they're not going to reconcile, and I think all of their little quips back and forth are bullshit. And Banana, like, Tony can execute, and Bananas can steer him, and I think in that sense they're a powerful team. I'm only upset that we didn't get at least one season where Tony and Bananas weren't forced to work together to see if there would be actual tension.
Yes.
Because now, like, this totally dissolves any rivalry they might have had.
Yeah, definitely. Come next season, they'll be back on the same page. We need, like, I 100% agree with you. We needed a season where if people were rallying troops and an alliance, where Tony and Bananas would stay, who would go with Tony's side, who would go with Johnny. Like, that we needed that, and that we don't get it at all. I feel like the move by Tony is like it's kind of like, I mean, it's great for him because he doesn't really have to suffer any blowback at all, because the only season, like, he's automatically now going to be right back in Bananas' good graces.
And now we can talk about what we were vague about last week, is basically Devin and Bananas were originally partners, which I think would have been a more interesting dynamic. But Devin's father unfortunately passed away like right before filming, and he couldn't make it out. So Tony was actually a substitute, which is why it was such bullshit when TJ was like, oh, your partner didn't even bother to show up.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess, I mean, I don't think they were going to just like say the truth. I feel like this is like, I guess you could do that. But I agree with you. I wish it was Bananas and Devin. I think that is a far more interesting duo, because I don't like, even if they were partnered together, I could still see them next season not being friends. Like, even if they came together for this season, I could see them next season, Devin still being like, all right, I'm taking my shot again at him. But Tony is definitely going to be right back on the saddle.
And it would be like Wes and Kenny were like, they legitimately don't like each other. They were never friends. You know, like, they, like, Devin and Bananas, even if they reconciled through the season, it would be a rougher road.
Yep. 100% agree. And Devin's become, like, a pretty integral part, I think, of these casts about. I think he's, like, a leader in certain groups of alliances, so I think not having him is a real bummer.
You want to talk about the challenge?
Sure. So it's wreck yourself. You have one person strapped to... you have one person on a ledge. You have another person on like a string where you push them into the center and they have to collect as many rings as possible. So they're all colliding into each other.
Yeah, what did you think of this?
So I was a little confused why they had a winner play again. I don't know why they needed to do that. I guess, I mean, it seems kind of random. Like, if you're in the first group, you have the opportunity to play again, but if you're in the second group, you don't. I don't know why they couldn't just had two different heats and just the winner is the winner. But it was a fun challenge. I think it's nothing they've really done before, so it's fun to see something new. But, I mean, so yeah, I was into it.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was because if you go in the heat where there's one less person, it's easier because it's for some people because you don't get tangled up with the person next to you if no one's next to you. But I did also think it was very strange to get two chances. I also thought, like, and maybe this is because I don't have appreciation while watching it on TV, that, like, the pusher doesn't really do anything. Like, maybe they direct them, but I thought a lot of teams had their stronger person as the pusher, and that seemed to be a mistake.
Yeah, I think they were thinking that you needed like a full push to get to where you needed, as opposed to just kind of like gravity doing the trick or the person on the swing just being able to grab whatever they needed to. I think it was, I think the second heat did a better job of who was the pusher, who was the grabber. But yeah, I think for the first heat, they didn't really understand how it was going to play out.
Like, for Derek should never be the lead on anything. That was so pathetic.
He is so bad. It's incredible how bad he is at, like, everything. He's not good at, like, anything so far.
I actually did love the description from Bananas as, like, he's a car that, like, looks good when you drive it out, and the second you get off the lot, everything's, like, messed up with it.
Yes, absolutely. It was a perfect description.
Mike Bloom says, considering how much the edit laid into Derek this episode, what are the chances that he returns to the challenge after this? It was giving me shades of Dunbar slamming Tyree as a partner in confessional.
I mean, the fact that he's been back, I think is this his third season already, I think? It's at least his second. The fact that he keeps getting called is surprising to me. And he's doing enough in like his appearances, I guess, to foster some sort of dynamic with other people that he keeps getting called back. So I don't think this would... stop that going forward.
This is going to come off very wrong, but he's very lucky that Tori cheated on him last season.
Yeah, that's 100% right.
Without that, I don't think he comes back.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Faith and Angela, on the other hand, killed it. Yeah. Shelby Heinmiller says, are we impressed with how well Faith and Angela did?
How would you not be impressed? They did a great job. Now, I feel like we see this a lot in these like rival seasons where there's like a rookie pair. I feel like there's always one that like pops early and does like a lot better than you would expect. I feel like I remember like Jasmine and John A, their first season and like in the first rivals winning at the challenge. So I feel like it's great to see, but it's also not surprising.
Also, generally, like, you know, Cam's the standout last season, then Tori was a standout rookie in her season. Like, I definitely think Angela and Faith are just integrating straight away.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't know anything about Faith's background about being in the military, so it seems like she could definitely hold her own in anything that she has to do.
Oh, for sure. I am going to get really sick of the storyline of Veronica bitching about CT as a partner because... then she has to perform well. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. That is so sad, Veronica.
That's so preposterous. So, like, if you're complaining about having CT as a partner, you just shouldn't be on, like, the show. Because, like, that's hitting the gold line. So, I don't know. She needs to stop with that.
I know there are Veronica stands out there. Please defend this comment.
To say, like, oh, poor me. I actually have to try. Poor me. Like, get out of here.
So, Kyle and Brad win. I don't even think they needed... the second heat, but they did win. And Tori and Derek and Zach and Amanda were the bottom two, but TJ lets us know that if you didn't win, you lost, and everybody's up for elimination.
Yeah, so we don't really know exactly how teams are going in. It seems like there's like an Armageddon twist that happens. We don't really know the rules of that. Just, you know, what's a challenge season without really knowing the rules of elimination two episodes in, so down this road again.
Well, what's a challenge podcast without speculation? Yeah. So let's speculate for a little bit. It looks like there's going to be a little beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop, and the light's going to, like, pick a team to go in.
You know, of all your invitations, your beep, boop, beep, boop, I think is right up there.
Should I add it to my list of Muzzy and the Dream Phone guy?
I think so. That was fantastic. All right.
Okay, for a second, I just thought I was confusing the game Dream Phone. It's correct.
You know what that sounded like? That sounded a lot like the original Whammo. Not Whammo, Whammy. Like that sound effect?
No whammy stop?
Yeah, like when it's going on the board. But it, like, they changed the sound. Like, they changed it from, like, the older version to the new one.
Wait, what's it called?
Is it just called Whammy?
Pressure luck. Whammy was the all new pressure luck.
So the original pressure luck, that sound was like identical to the sound going on.
That's what
the board.
I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There you go.
Let's just end the podcast right now. No. So I think that's interesting. TJ says in the preview, if you're going to vote someone in, you better be prepared to take them out yourselves. No one's going to want to do that. It's going to end up being the weaker teams going in, but I do think it's an interesting concept.
So what do you think it means? That, like, the winning team is safe, and that if they want to vote someone in, then they go in also?
No, I think what TJ means is, like, you're going to want to... if you're ready to vote someone in, just generally, like, I think the House is going to do a vote, or you think the power team is going to decide?
The way I thought it was, like, the winning team picks someone to go in, and then the remaining teams it's like a new draw where it's like they're all standing there and, like, a random team just goes in.
That's what I thought, but now I'm not making sense of TJ's comment, because if he says if you're going to vote someone in, you better be prepared to send them in yourself. Maybe is the winning team possibly not safe?
That's what I'm thinking. It's like, is it possible where, like, it's either two random teams going in? Or if the winning team wants to send someone in, then they send themselves in also, which why would you ever do that?
Or it could be the winning team just votes the person in, but they're up for the Armageddon selection as well. So it's like, you better be prepared to take them out if you get picked by this beep boop beep boop light.
Yeah, that could be it. Like, you give up your immunity for, like, the one in 10 shot or 9 shot, whatever team's left. That's interesting.
Or you just don't have immunity. Did he say they're safe? He just said you're going to want to be close to them.
No, I think he said you're safe, I think.
Very interesting. I do like that they mix this up.
Yes, I do. I do like that. I just wish they don't wait freaking 3 episodes till we know what goes down. But I do like that the rules aren't the same every season.
Do I remember us seeing a preview where the double cross was in play? Last week I remember seeing the double cross. I don't know if it was like scenes from the last two seasons of the trilogy or not.
I think it was the trilogy previously.
All right, well, I'm cool with the beep boo.
Yeah, the beep boop beep boop.
That's what I'm gonna call it now.
No whammy bust. Did you ever see that documentary on the original pressure lock?
Oh, yes.
Oh my god, it's one of my favorites. I need to find that. I haven't watched that in forever. The fact that he broke a game show, that's incredible. Guy doesn't get enough credit.
I have to tell you, it's shocking. I talk about this at least twice a year. No exaggeration. It comes up.
It's incredible to beat the game.
For anyone who doesn't know, a guy like memorized the light patterns on Pressure Luck and won $1 billion and then did a documentary about it. Yeah. Sad story, though. I think it didn't go so well for him in life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're spending your every day studying the lighting of a game show, I feel like not all your screws are there to begin with. So now you give them some money and it's going to go down poorly.
I mean, we do this.
Yeah. if we start getting some money, it's going to go poorly.
All right. So a couple of things to discuss. One more question and then a little Twitter and we'll be out of here. Scott Juer says, please discuss, and then posted a picture of an advertisement with a familiar fellow, and it says, we've gone bananas, first look. You want to set this up?
Yeah, so it looks like he's hosting. First, I thought he got, like, this was a new show created for Johnny Bananas to host on NBC. I think it's, like, Saturday nights after SNL, but it seems like this is an already established show, and they just rotate, like, the season's hosts or something like that, and now he's just the host.
Yeah, so my understanding is this, like, it's like a travel show, right?
It's a travel show. I've never seen it, but that's what I've heard.
So what do you think this means for Bananas on the challenge?
I mean, it'll be interesting. Maybe it'll conflict with the next season, so maybe he actually has to miss one, but I just don't see him going away anytime soon. I think he's just so embedded in this world, and it's just like, why would he ever leave unless he, like, all of a sudden just becomes, like, like an actual producer or something like that. I just don't see why he would ever leave.
Yeah, he did an interview, and I'm not remembering where it was from. I'm sorry, but it was about whether or not this meant he'd leave the challenge. I think he did some quote of like, you know, I'm getting older, I can't do it forever. But I mean, if this is certainly not as threatening as the Jeff Probst show was to Survivor, and that didn't work either. But yeah, this seems like it's a travel show where they focus on cuisine and nightlife. I'm reading from Wikipedia, my reliable source. So yeah, if anybody wants to check that out, it's way past my bedtime after SNL. But good for him. It's something new.
Yeah.
He's been doing a lot of producing on the challenge, just producing drama and his little GoPro moments.
He'll bring the banana cam.
I'm sure he'll be great.
Banana cam to NBC.
Okay. A couple of things from Twitter. Thank you to Megan Elizabeth, our digital communications manager, for always keeping us posted. I did some scanning. The biggest thing I found was that Paulie's Twitter name is Paul Calafiore.
Okay.
That, I think I could stop the Twitter segment right now because that really stopped me in my tracks.
Is Paulie taken? Like, is that why?
No, it's his like chosen name.
Oh, like his, you could put, oh, yeah. Gotcha. His like name.
His handle is Paul Calafiore, but his name is also Paul.
But that's also weird. Like, why is in his hand? Why is in his handle Paulie?
But his Snapchat is at PaulieC116, which leads me to believe that he's trying to rebrand as a more mature person who would pay rent in your brain.
Seems like it. His actions don't, but his Twitter handle does.
Natalie did some interviews that if you want to know some more information are worth checking out. Final line in her story from her Twitter. She said, I came out with my story to share my truth with those who are battling the same thing I did. Do not throw hate at anyone for their actions. I wanted to use my platform to educate people who are not informed. Let's spread love and education, not hate. So that'd be hard for me, but I'll try for Natalie. Oh, and then another fight happened between Kara and Ashley, which just kills me because, like, they're not on the show. Like, Ashley's not on the show.
Right.
So, I guess, like, Us Magazine has been doing a lot of stuff with Kara, and they did, like, a Kara response to mean tweets. And they did the tweet we covered last week of where she was saying she was, like, unstable. And Ashley said, what I meant to say was mentally weak. Chasing around two men who told her they had girlfriends and crying about it is weak, not unstable, I guess. And then Kara said, from one dishonorable human to another dishonorable human. Actually, she said dishonorable human. But who am I to correct typos? I can barely spell. Mm-hmm. I say, go away, please. Can we borrow that? Like, I say, go away, please.
Sounds like a French king.
I figured you would be out spending money on things to make yourself happy rather than spending time talking about me on Twitter.
Yeah, because Carr never talks about anyone on Twitter.
Well, you wouldn't know because she blocked you.
Sure. I get caught up, though.
One thing that really upset me is we got no reviews. Not even negative reviews,
womp.
Just no reviews.
Womp.
It's funny because I thought our show was really great last week. I actually listened to it myself, which I never do because I had fun doing it and I enjoyed listening to it. And I thought my Big Brother show was terrible because I was getting a fever mid-show.
No, that was good. And that was a great listen.
Whenever I get I get good feedback on shows I think are terrible. When I think a show is fun, we get nothing.
It was just really funny because I didn't know. Because I missed, if Rob mentioned on his Thursday podcast that you were going to be on Sunday, I missed his Thursday one.
No, because I made arrangements with him on Friday.
Because I didn't know, all of a sudden, like, I'm listening on Monday morning, and he's like, and here's Allie Lash. I'm like, am I in the Challenge podcast? What's happening? And then there you were.
Yeah, I just snuck in at the 11th hour, unprepared and feverish.
Yeah, I felt backdoored.
So if you want to make us not feel like feverish and backdoored, you should let us know you're listening. You did get a lot of congratulations.
I got a lot of congratulations on Twitter, everyone. Thank you so much. It was very, very nice of everyone.
I kept searching Brian Cohen to like all of them. I was like, Amanda, just searching, but your name, not my own.
Yes, thank you so much to everyone. It was very, very nice of everyone.
Thanks most of all to me.
Yes, for encouraging everyone. You're the puppet master for all the likers, so you get the most credit.
Oh my God, anyone who congratulated you on your engagement and congratulated me on the mouse, I laughed so hard. Like, I know we said that as a joke, but when it actually came in, I wept.
Yeah, that was
I literally
funny.
Wept.
That was good. I didn't expect anyone to write the congrats on you. That was amazing.
I think... Oh, so you can do that at robhasawebsite.com/challenge iTunes. Did you get long enough in the podcast, and no offense taken if you didn't, when Rob asked me if I knew the website?
Yes,
to our...
I listened to the whole thing. I got every word. Yes.
I was like, how unprofessional do you think I am? I don't know
like
my own
said,
website.
Like, it's when I ask you for, like, do you know your Twitter handle? I think it's just like your opportunity to plug it yourself.
I was already beaten down emotionally during that podcast about the challenge. That was on the defense.
Yes.
If you're not interested in Big Brother, but you're interested in the challenge, towards the end of the podcast, even after the Big Brother spoilers, Rob watched the first episode of the challenge. We talk about it a little bit. And it's basically just me defending my family against Rob.
It's the type of show when, like, we all really like it, but then when you have to defend it and you're saying the things that happen out loud, you're like, what the hell show am I watching?
Afterwards, Rob was like, I hope I didn't offend you. And I was like, oh, no. It's one of those things where it's like, I could talk about how much the challenge sucks. But when somebody else does, like, it's not okay.
It's your nerdy little brother that, like, you could pick on. And someone else throws a rock at them. And it's not fair.
Yeah. No. Or a pillow.
Right. Or a pillow. Oh, man. Angela's going to be a lot of fun. Oh, boy.
You should go back and watch X on the Beach. At least the first 3 episodes.
I need someone just to do a quick compilation of all of Angela's moments. And maybe I'll just watch that. So.
We can't even get someone to keep track of our stupid drinking game. You think somebody's going to make a clip show for you?
I just say things into the world, and maybe they pop up on YouTube. You never know sometimes.
Watch, like 2 seconds from now, you're going to get a clip show. Yep. We still can't get somebody to track the stupid game.
You can follow me on Twitter, at @ColinBryan_, and they can follow you where?
You think I don't know my own Twitter? No, at @LastSheets.
Subscribe, robs@website.com/challenge iTunes. We'll be back next week for episode 3. Until then, have a good one.